The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent the views of Clear Channel Radio, nor should they be regarded as legal or investment advice. Seek qualified counsel before acting on any views expressed in this show.
This is Investor IQ with Glenn Wessel, where you hear straight talk about financial topics that impact you. Got a tax, financial, or investment question? As a CPA and holder of the Certified Financial Planner and Chartered Financial Analyst credentials, Glenn Wessel's the guy to ask. Now, here's Glenn.
And a very good morning to all of you. My name is Glenn Wessel, host of Investor IQ. Delighted to be here once again this Saturday morning here on WWNC, the talk of the mountains. Rob Simon's here with me. You would think that I forgot who he was, but I can't see him through that microphone over there.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rob. Good morning, Agnes.
Good morning.
All right. So last week we were discussing some of the jewels of wisdom, pearls of wisdom from legendary investor Warren Buffett, and we actually didn't have a chance to finish that. So we have just a few more of those this week before we get on to other things. One quick quote that I think is worth mentioning is that Warren Buffett, as an investor, isn't really looking to make a home run. His quote is, "I would rather be certain of a good result than hopeful of a great one." And that reminds me of other sayings like a bird in the bush is worth, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, and easier to pick the low-hanging fruit and so on. And I think that makes a lot of sense for the typical investor to take a step back and really evaluate what the risks are. And if the risks are too high, maybe better to go with something that has less risk with it, where you are more assured of at least a reasonably good outcome. Similar to a baseball player who hits for average, gets on base a lot, and ends up scoring in different ways. Another quote that Warren Buffett is famous for is noting that he regards the most pernicious risk that investors face not as the principal value of the account or the how it swings in terms of price or credit risk for bonds. What he regards as the most pernicious risk is the long-term erosion of purchasing power. And once that becomes apparent, that, for instance, if you realize, I have a 1966 Ford Fairlane, that when that car was new, that would be the equivalent of maybe a Toyota Camry or a Honda Accord in today's economy. And those cars cost probably, what do you think, Rob, 20,000 something, 25,000 maybe?
Right.
I'm not really sure what they cost. But that car in 1966, which by now is a hot rod, but back then, just as a normal grocery getting vehicle, that car was around $2,000, $2,500. So in the period of around 40 years, 43 years, I guess is what that car is now, the price of it has, what is that? Gone up 20 times?
Yeah.
Yeah, 20 times, something like that. Or 10 times.
10 times.
10 or 15 times. So that is a tremendous risk that I think people tend to underestimate. In my opinion, they focus far too much on short-term variability of assets and not on the long-term outcomes that are going to be much more important. Anyway, we're going to move on. We've had a few responses from listeners and questions. And I know that, Rob, you have the questions over there, I believe, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So one question we had from an investor was, what is an inflation index security?
We've actually addressed inflation indexed securities a time or two, as I recall. But in general, it's any type of security where it's benchmarked, the price or the value of that security over time is benchmarked to changes in inflation or deflation, as it turns out. So in the United States, we have something called TIPS, which stands for, go ahead, Rob, you take it from here.
Treasury Inflation Protected Securities.
That's right. It's a long name. Other countries issue similar types of securities that are generically known as inflation-linked or inflation-indexed securities. The prime feature of these securities is that since bonds pay interest, and that's what treasuries are, the bonds in this case pay interest in a way where there's a division between the real return, which is the return after inflation, and the inflation return. So what happens if you buy a traditional bond is that you'll pay, let's say, $1,000, and you'll buy a brand new bond at par, at its par value or face value, and that's it. That bond will always have a par value of $1,000, and it may pay 3 or 4 or 5% for 5 or 10 or 20 years or whatever the term is, and that's it. And you as an investor are going to be hoping that that 3 or 4 or 5% is going to be good enough to cover the inflation that you're expecting. Whereas with a treasury inflation protected security, explain what happens to the par value of the bond, Rob.
The par value would go up with an adjustment for the consumer price index every year.
Right.
Down if it was deflating.
That's right. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they actually make those adjustments semi-annually, which is
right.
Just a minor point. But so let's say that you buy that bond and it offers a minuscule rate of return of 1.75% or 2%. That's not very good. But the good part is that if the inflation rate is, let's say, 2%, you're going to get a 2% bump in the actual par value of that bond over the course of a year. You might get 1% after 6 months and another 1%
right.
6 months after that. But let's say that you are thinking that there will be increased inflation and that inflation will eventually start hitting, 4 or 5 or 6% or some ugly number. Well, the good news is those bonds will be indexed for that. So you'll get a 4 or 5 or 6% bump to your principal value every year in addition to the 1.75 or 2% interest that bond also pays. So
right.
You are, in essence, hedged for inflation. The good news is that they also work in reverse for deflation, which I'll let you try to describe.
So they can't go down below a par value for the bond, which would be, if the bond is priced at $1,000 a bond, then they can't go down below that value over time.
That's right, as far as the par value. Now, these bonds, of course, are subject to market pricing, so they could trade above or below what the par value is. But if you hold it to maturity, you are guaranteed to at least ride along with inflation and be hedged to some extent against deflation as well. So they're kind of a cool instrument. Not that we necessarily think there's going to be runaway inflation. There are very strong cases as to why that might actually not occur, not the least of which would be the increased unemployment, which provides a lot of headroom for the economy to stay away from inflation. But let's hit the topic of phantom income before we get out of here for the break, Rob.
Sure. So that inflation adjustment that they do on a yearly basis, you pay tax on that at the federal level, even though you're not actually receiving that income at that time.
Right. So it's called phantom income. You're paying, it violates the typical principle of only paying taxes when you have the cash to pay. So sometimes people put them in IRAs so they don't have to worry about that. So with that, we're up against the break. I'm Glenn. He's Rob. This is Investor IQ, where we try to give people a fair shake. We'll be back in just a moment.